Did you know we're running a convention? That's right. In less than 2 weeks from when we're recording this, so definitely less than 2 weeks from when you're hearing it, it's going to be the Nerd and Tie Expo, September 23rd through 25th in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, at the Plaza Hotel and Suites. We've got guests like Tiffany Grant, we've got Linkara, we've got cosplayer Helena Steele, podcaster Sean the Orange Course, we've got band Bards of the Goddesses. It's going to be amazing. Admission for the weekend is only $40 to the general public, $30 to UW Eau Claire and CBTC students. It's going to be great, and you should be there. Also, this episode of Nerd and Tie is brought to you by listeners like you. If you would like to help contribute to Nerd and Tie and help us out all around, go to GoFundMe.com/Nerd and Tie.
On this Fortnite's edition of Nerd and Tie, we're celebrating 50 years of Star Trek. Majel Barrett may voice the computer in Star Trek Discovery. The Bilkies from Mythbusters are getting their own show. Netflix is renewing Stranger Things. Jason Momoa will star in The Crow. And we've got a mail bag. Welcome to Nerd and Talk.
That time we remembered to talk.
Yeah. What are you talking about, Trey? This is...
It's that I unplugged my mic. There's a distinct difference.
We do everything in one take. What are you talking about?
It's okay. I've got Fazoli's breadsticks here.
Pass some over here. Give them... Why you can't bring food into the theater?
This isn't the theater. This is the studio in the Nerdodome.
Food into the Nerdodome.
I prefer to refer to it as a Nerdatorium.
And you definitely can't talk with your mouth full. That's rude.
You should introduce us, Nick.
Talking with his mouth full of delicious Fazoli's breadsticks is the hero that Gotham deserves, Trey Dorn.
Sup?
Pointing out Trey's obvious rudeness and how one ought to behave in the Nerdatorium, we've got Professor Fur.
There's no fighting in the Nerdatorium.
And, unable to keep my mic plugged in, apparently, I'm Nick Izumi. We did a second take because my mic was unplugged for intro.
We're professionals.
We got this. We can do this.
I'm pro something. I don't know what. So this is a pretty fun news docket. Not too bad a fortnight of things happening.
Sad. Like, this is great. Normally we always open with something depressing, but not this time.
This is like, actually, I'm willing to say that our opening this fortnight is, for at least for me personally, the exact opposite of sadness. Star Trek is 50 years old, you guys.
Hot
like,
diggity.
Officially.
Yeah, it's like Thursday. Yeah. This last Thursday.
I don't think I'm alienating any of us when I say Star Trek is one of the best sci-fi shows ever made.
I would say not only one of the best, but one of the most important. I mean, it really kind of set the tone for modern day, maybe not most recent modern day sci-fi, but I mean, for a good 30 years, what we had for sci-fi was based on what Star Trek presented.
Well, and it,
one
it,
of the
it,
most progressive shows of the 60s.
Well, it, besides the social progressiveness, it kind of created the modern adult science fiction series. Like, the science fiction series aimed at adults, period. Because, like, even, you know, Doctor Who predates it, but Doctor Who started out as a kids' show. Like, it evolved into, like, family entertainment for all ages, but it started out as, you know, as a kids' show.
Lost in Space was, I mean, supposed to be...
That was supposed to be for the whole, like, the whole age group and became a kids' show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Star Trek, it didn't lose its way. It, you know, it was a consistently really solid program. And, you know, I've been looking back at it, especially in recent months, and just realizing what an important influence it was on my life. And the fan that I am right now. And it's, You know, there are so many parts of it that have held up so well. You watch the episodes of the original series, and they're so many of them are just as poignant and awesome as they were when they first came out. So many of the movies still hold up.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's some cringeworthy moments in the 1960s. The Yangs and the Coms.
The last episode they ever aired was sexist and awful, but...
Yeah, it's pretty good for the 1960s. Mm-hmm. They did accurately predict which day of the week the moon landing would happen on, though, so it's...
That's awesome. That's legitimately awesome.
They had a 1 in 7 chance. And they got it.
Even more than that, I mean, who'd have thought that a show that, I mean, when it was first pitched, I mean, like, the CBS didn't want it. They you know, Roddenberry went to CBS with it, and they were like, no, we're not gonna, get this out of here. And then NBC took a look at it, said, yeah, okay, we'll do this. And of course, the first episode, The Cage, they weren't a huge fan of it.
To be fair, The Cage has a lot of problems. So.
I believe the reason was that The Cage was too dark? Wasn't that the reason NBC said, well...
Cerebral.
Yeah, that was what it was. They thought it was too cerebral.
Too cerebral. Said, there was a woman in command. That guy looks like the devil. I believe were some other complaints.
But NBC thankfully kept it and said, okay, well, we'll keep it, but try something different for the first episode we're going to air.
Well, no, for the pilot. They made them redo a whole new pilot before they ordered a series.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it worked. And
was not the first episode aired, though.
No, the first episode aired was...
The Man Trap. Yeah. Salt Vampire episode. That scared me as a little kid when I watched that for the first time. Because
it's a good episode.
It is, and it's a really good episode to start with because, I mean, from Where No Man Has Gone Before, which is the first episode chronologically out of Kirk's run and is the second pilot, while an enjoyable episode, doesn't really grab people.
No, it has some of the same
high concept ideas. Like, the Man Trap is a straight up, you know, here's a monster. Like, here's a science fiction monster story we'll start you with, you know, instead of the, you know, concept of, you know, humans evolving beyond... like comprehension of regular people and like all that stuff. Yeah.
To be fair, Where No Man Has Gone Before is kind of pre Akira in its own little way. The whole guy suddenly gets psychic powers and everything goes to hell.
Yeah. So here's my thing. Do you guys think that Paramount and CBS really kind of botched up the 50th anniversary?
Yes. Hugely. Like,
I think so. Yeah.
Like, can you imagine how well Star Trek Beyond would have done if it came out this weekend? There is, like, zero competition in the theaters.
Right? Hands down. I think they rushed out to make it the summer blockbuster that they were hoping would rake in a lot of money. But the problem with that is you have a lot of other summer blockbusters. But, I mean, a 50th anniversary only comes around once every 50 years. And
yeah, if they would have put it out, I wish they would have had something out on the 50th anniversary, not just because, I mean, like, the only things that I saw were, you know, some local stations were like, come join us as we rerun the first episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the internet did a good enough.
Better.
Yeah. The internet did a great job celebrating the 50th anniversary. Of course, Facebook had all sorts of stuff up their sleeves for the 50th anniversary. Every other social media page seemed to do the same. Every website seemed to have something. So the internet definitely didn't drop the ball when it came to recognizing the 50th anniversary. But you're absolutely right, Trey.
Paramount put out like this half-assed video, which was because the annoying thing with the way that CBS and Paramount have split the rights to Star Trek, the Paramount only owns the rights to the movies right now. So their little 50th anniversary video is all original series movies, next-gen movies, and reboot movie clips, and nothing else. Like, there's not a single television clip in the entire video they put out, and so...
Do you guys... I mean, like, this is going to sound weird to say this, but do you think that, like, that CBS Paramount, I mean, with even what limited they can do with the show, Did it almost kind of feel like they were ashamed?
For the last few years, it feels like they've been ashamed because no one has been trying to. They're not trying hard enough.
I think this all has to do with the Viacom split. So, you know, it used to be that, you know, Star Trek was a Paramount thing. And then Viacom bought everybody. And then when that all split back up, CBS got to hold on to the TV show and Paramount has a license to keep making movies. And that's, again, why, you know, the new series is going to be in the prime reality instead of the alternate, the Kelvin timeline. So the movies can be in a separate reality from they don't have to work group together. But here's the thing. I don't think CBS really cares about the film franchise, so they're doing nothing to help Paramount promote it. And I think it's led to, no one's guiding the brand completely anymore.
Which is too bad. I mean, it's such a good... It's obvious. I mean, it's the 50th anniversary. We've seen the impact that it's had. Not only on the U.S., but also the entire world this week. You'd think that at some point they'd say, you know what, we can do a lot more together with this, not this huge influential franchise, this property.
It's tragic because they're hurting themselves.
Yeah, it's
They're brushing.
They're treating Star Trek like, well, this is something. Yeah, here it is. As opposed to look at Disney, who has taken Star Wars and frickin' run with the thing.
Yeah, and it's CBS has shunted off the next series onto their online. Well, they're trying to use the new Star Trek series to sell their online only service, and that's fine. You know, I totally get that move. I think it's annoying, but I understand it from a business point of view they think it's a big lure to sell their network. But because nothing is ready for it, I think that they should have held off the reveal of the Discovery's design until the 50th.
Same, so that they could have something to reveal on the 50th. Because
they haven't revealed the cast. They haven't, we know very little about, they should have saved some big announcement for the 50th and made a huge deal of it. They would have captured headlines. And that's, I don't know. For me, at least for the 50th last night, I went out and saw Star Trek Beyond for a second time at a drive-in. And that was amazing. And I was reminded how good, that's why I'm irritated Star Trek Beyond was released in such a busy movie season, because it's the best Star Trek movie we've gotten since First Contact.
It's probably the best movie that came out this summer, frankly.
Yeah.
And honestly, from a financial standpoint, if you release Star Trek Beyond on the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, how do you not rake in less than $100 million opening weekend?
But instead, they tossed it out in July.
Yeah, how do you not make every... how do you not be the biggest September opening in the history of movie releases?
And it was a really inconvenient, time when it came out. I went out of my way to see it because I love Star Trek, but I know a lot of people didn't. I know a lot of people didn't even realize it was out, and it's a loss. It's a huge loss.
I will tell you, when I went and saw Star Trek in the theaters... I heard this couple behind me where there was a couple who was going to go see a movie, and the girlfriend said to the guy, "Oh, wait, there's a Star Trek movie and you're dragging me to this other thing? Why aren't we going to see Star Trek?" She didn't... Apparently, this person was a Star Trek fan who had no idea there was a movie out.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I feel like the even Beyond, my favorite movie of the entire summer, I feel like the marketing didn't help it either. It is one of my biggest, it's definitely my biggest example this year of terrible trailer for great movie.
Remember that first trailer we got? How all three of us even were like, oh, this is awful. This isn't going to be good.
Justin Lin hated that trailer because he was like, of course they had to put the bike jump in it.
Simon Pegg hated the trailer too. Yeah, it was, and when, like, this... What gave me hope was when the staff hated the trailer, but their promotions were so off point, and I had talked to Star Trek fans. I talked to people who regularly write into the show who told me they were nervous about seeing it because of the trailer and because of Into Darkness. And it's like, no. Go see it. It's a great movie.
Well, and Justin Lin's apparently a lifelong Star Trek fan. Like, everyone's like, oh, yeah, he directed a bunch of Fast and Furious movies. But he also, like, really likes Star Trek.
So why is it then that Paramount is, like, nobody is ashamed of Star Trek except for Paramount, who said, no one will want to go see this movie unless we action up the trailer. Meanwhile, every other person in the world is saying, but Star Trek's really good, you guys.
I think there's still a sort of stigma directed toward like things that are considered overtly nerdy. I think a lot of people see Star Trek as like the nerdiest of the science fiction. Like it doesn't have when I was growing up, that was always the interesting thing was I knew tons of kids who liked Star Wars. No one liked Star Trek. In my neighborhood, you know, I was very lonely in that fandom.
And not to get on the whole, like the part about nerd culture that I hate the most is this idea of how dare they like what I like. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, you look at even shows like Doctor Who right now, Doctor Who, I don't think could be like Doctor Who is not nerdy necessarily anymore. Well, I mean,
okay. So the thing with Star Trek,
it's definitely mainstream anyway.
The thing with Star Trek is it's always was mainstream. It's, mm-hmm. What it is that there are dedicated fans who always, like, were really, really into it. But, you know, you take their... They're always, like, fans... Like, my parents are Star Trek fans. They are not anywhere... Okay, so, like, I'm a real... Like, I'm really a really huge Star Trek fan. My parents would never go to a convention. They do not know the name of, like, every random ship class.
I was about to say, see, just a couple episodes ago when we all started discussing the best class of Federation Starship.
Well, you're all about the Miranda class, right?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I like
Miranda Bestanda.
I've always had a thing for the Nebula. I just can't not love the Nebula. But anyways,
I can't hear you over the fact that we don't waste any space and we're just a saucer and nacelles. Woo!
So is the Nebula. So is the Nebula.
We've been down this road. Let's get away from it again.
The Nebula is like a big Miranda, no only trick. With holodecks.
We've already done this.
All right.
We
so anyway,
do it again.
But my point is that like my parents are not those people. Like, but they know, you know, like they, but like they know like all the major plots from you know the show because they watched every episode with me as a kid. Like they're the ones who got me into Star Trek, but. Like they're,
truth
you know,
be told, it's the same for me, like with my dad anyway.
And so I think that a lot of the casual Star Trek fans who would, it's like my parents don't care about Star Trek any more than they care about The Good Wife. But they watch it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, to them, it's just another show that they enjoy. But and that's and Star Trek, frankly, like Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, they wouldn't have been on the air for 7 seasons apiece if there weren't fans like that.
Exactly.
It's, you know, Star Trek gets canceled when it doesn't have fans like that. You know, be it Enterprise or the original series, because frankly, you know, we talk about how influential this series was, but it ran for 79 episodes and got canceled because no one was watching it. The reason why Star Trek became popular because it was syndicated and it was UHF channels would get it for cheap and just play it all the time. And so what, like
what, one of my favorite jokes in the Futurama episode of where all the Star Trek original voice actors minus Scotty because James Doohan's agent didn't want him to have anything to do with it. Was when Fry's trying to remind Leonard Nimoy about this show, and he goes, you know, Star Trek, 79 episodes, about half of them were good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not wrong.
Absolutely. So, I mean, yeah, we talk, like you said, we talk about how influential it was, but like it didn't really get popular until it hit the syndication.
Yeah.
And actually, if you can find it, there's a great Saturday Night Live sketch from back in the 70s that talks about it, with John Belushi playing Kirk. And the whole premise of the sketch is that they're doing an episode when they get canceled. So NBC executives come in and take away everything on the set, and they're just playing it off like it's an episode of Star Trek. Like Kirk is trying to fight the alien executives, and it's a great sketch if you can find it.
Yeah, no, it's like Star Trek is so though, like, you know, its impact on fandom culture in America cannot be understated. It was really like, because like science fiction conventions obviously existed long before that, but like the Star Trek convention, like it really kind of created the modern media convention. You know what I mean?
Mm, and, yeah.
And it was the.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say it was the biggest like solidifying fandom. Like, I got into working conventions because I was a member of Starfleet Academy of Greater Milwaukee in the mid-90s. And when Gen Con needed volunteers, they, you know, back in the mid-90s, they used to reach out to all the local fan clubs, be it, you know, and most a lot of those clubs don't exist anymore. Some still do, like Milwaukee Time Lords, I think, is still out there. But I was in Starfleet Academy of Greater Milwaukee and in a Klingon costuming group that doesn't exist anymore, the IKV Duras. And and so my Star Trek fandom got me into that group, got me into working conventions, and kind of like created this whole trajectory of my adult life.
Yeah, there's so many parts of fandom I don't know if we'd have without Star Trek. Like, a lot of the terminology we use for fan fiction comes from Star Trek.
Yeah.
I mean, fan fiction itself, largely.
The first slash fic was Star Trek fan fiction.
The term Mary
That's still
Sue
important.
Comes from A Trekkie's Tale, which is a Star Trek fan fiction. Making fun of bad self-insert fanfic, and then getting co-opted by jackasses.
God, I just... It really, like, and the fact that this sci-fi show that almost it didn't even happen has been such... There'd so much. I mean, like, how, like, even phrases, like, I mean, using the phrase, you know, putting your shields up when you're talking to somebody, you know, about emotional issues and whatnot. That comes from Star. It's amazing how much of our vernacular comes from Star Trek without people even realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
So cool. Speaking of pretty cool things related to Star Trek, one of the longest involved people in the Star Trek universe, Majel Barrett Roddenberry, of course, Gene Roddenberry's wife, was pretty much present from day one of Star Trek. She was on the Birdcage. She played a character on the Birdcage.
You mean the cage?
But
did you call the episode The Cage the Birdcage?
I did. I was thinking of something else, obviously.
One of those is a film with Robin Williams and Nathan Lane.
It is.
The other one, The Cage, is the pilot of the original
the
Star Trek.
The pilot of Star Trek.
I know why The Cage first officer sings.
Which is dumb because I even called it The Cage. I'm looking at... I'll tell you why that happened, because I'm looking at it on my movie shelf where I'm recording. She played a character in The Cage, but most importantly... she was the voice of the computer on every single iteration of Star Trek that ever existed. Was Majel Barrett Roddenberry. Her voice played the computer. Unfortunately, we lost her back in 2008 to leukemia. And the last time we had heard her voice was in the Star Trek reboot. In 2009, she had finished doing the voiceover work before she passed away. But thanks to modern day technology, we might possibly get to hear her voice, as the computer for Star Trek Discovery. thanks to, and I'm probably mispronouncing this right or wrong, thanks to phonemes? I don't know how to describe, how to pronounce that. Thanks to those phonemes?
So.
Thanks to those, we are able to reproduce her voice to create new words and new, basically new voiceover lines for the computer on Star Trek Discovery.
Well, yeah, it's what they did was before she died, they like, you know, they knew that obviously, you know, she was mortal. And they had her sit down and phonetically record like pretty much every sound in the English language. And so, the same way that any, thing does for like things like Siri, like how it has its voice process.
Siri uses it.
Yeah. It's just a way of, where they phonetically recorded pretty much every producible sound. They had her sit down in recording studio and do that and build a library that then could be reconstructed into, whatever they want to say. Now, obviously nothing's been confirmed for Star Trek Discovery, but, the Roddenberry's people, the Roddenberry estate is really kind of pushing to have her voice be used. I think Lucas has actually done this with James Earl Jones as well for Darth Vader stuff.
Huh. Probably. But I just think that's really cool. I mean, usually, you know, you've seen, you've heard voices getting used. I know back in Superman Returns, they reused Marlon Brando for clips and whatnot in that. But this is different in that they can pretty much have her saying whatever they need her to say, as opposed to just picking and choosing from a list of words that would make the sentence structure really unnatural. It actually sounds like what a person would say, which, like you said, Trey, is how they use for things like Siri and other recorded voiceover work.
And more importantly, they want to make it available so they can install this on other things like GPS programs. And
I would be all for having the Star Trek computer as my GPS.
That's pretty awesome.
But can we take it one step further? Can my GPS be Lou Oxana?
You mean Loxana?
Isn't it pronounced Lou Oxana? I remember. Yeah,
Loxana, dude.
Loxana. If you would like to write in about how her is screwing up everything, pronouncing and calling things names in Star Trek, go to nerdandtie.com/contact and tell us about it.
I've seen all of The Next Generation and at least two people pronounce it Lou Oxana.
That's two more than I wrote. Whatever.
No one who was, other than maybe the day players, man, like anyone who was part of the main cast, it's Loxana. Loxana
cool.
Troy.
Anyway, I'd really like to have Loxana because she's one of my favorite characters on the show. Anyway, that's pretty cool. Next story.
Moving.
No, I think we need to keep talking about you. No, okay, so I don't really have a good transition for this because, you know, how do you get from making fun of fur into actually talking about something serious? But, so we're all Mythbusters fans here. And, while, you know, we were sorry to see the show get canceled before it got canceled, like 2 years ago, it was announced that, long-term members of the cast, Carrie Byron, Tori Belleci, and, Grant Imahara left the show, known as the build team in earlier seasons and then just credited as full Mythbusters in later seasons. They were kind of, you know, let go of the show not long before the show's eventual cancellation. Now, for many of us, like, these three people were just as important to the show as Jamie and Adam. And the good news is that we'll get to see them on TV again.
Hooray!
Carrie Byron, Tori Belleci, and Grant Imahara have signed on with Netflix to produce a show called The White Rabbit Project. As in, and of course the name is in reference to going down the metaphorical rabbit hole as the three investigate weird events in pop culture, history, and science, and of course, you know, test things out and insert themselves into the stories by building experiments to get a better understanding of what happened. And so Yeah, the build team shall build again. And it's being produced by Beyond Productions, who, of course, made Mythbusters originally. And, yeah, it seems pretty cool from everything that I've heard.
Hmm.
Yeah. What do you guys think about that?
I'm on board with it. I mean, I love Mythbusters. I had a lot of fun with their entire show. I enjoyed the segments that I just automatically call them the build team, but I always enjoyed
everyone's
segments.
It's easy to refer to them as the build team, although then you have to clarify. No, not Scotty. Post Scotty leaving, you know, because.
I mean the post Scotty build team. They were.
Yeah, it's and the show.
I'll probably watch their show.
Yeah, it's set to premiere in December. Like, it's coming up pretty fast.
Because once again, Netflix is my favorite TV station right now.
Oh,
so
no, right?
I mean.
It's so good. Like, yeah, no, it's I'm excited because, you know, without Mythbusters, like, I know that they're doing like some the next Mythbusters reality thing on the Science Channel, but that's just weird.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think a lot of the greatness of the show is the on-screen personas, at least, that these people have. And so getting these three together, working together with the same production team that produced Mythbusters, that we're going to get to see a lot of the same kind of like stuff that we used to get on Mythbusters Classic. So I'm excited.
I am too. This sounds like the kind of show I would enjoy.
First quiet.
Sounds like I'll learn
mostly,
things.
Yeah. First being quiet, mostly because he's just very happy that he'll get to see Carrie Byron again.
Who wouldn't be?
I made fun of him to try to get a rise out of him, but he's just quiet.
Are you there, Fur?
It's me, Margaret. So, yeah, no, it's pretty great. It's pretty great.
It is extremely great, I think. I don't know. What do I know? I'm just excited. I'm trying to be happy about all sorts of stuff. What?
What?
Oh, nothing. I just thought I heard a weird beep.
You did. But
I think we lost Fur.
I don't know. He's got the next story. And we have transitions all set up.
I mean,
he didn't tell us he
God,
was doing.
The little thing about Netflix practically wrote itself.
I know. So let's talk about where we think Fur is.
Indeed.
In
my
fact,
bet.
What's your bet?
Explosive diarrhea. Yep.
Explosive diarrhea. I think
explosive
that
diarrhea.
He found a rift in space-time and poked his head in and just can't hear us because he's looking around there.
I want to look around in space-time. Can we still open the rift?
If you would like to tell us where you think Fur's gone, go to nerdandtie.com and click on the contact form and tell us what your particular fanfic is about where Fur went. When's Fur going to come back? Is he in the upside down? Is there a slug in his mouth?
Oh, God. I want to build off of that, but I don't want to build off of that because that's not my story.
I know, isn't that weird? Have you watched Stranger Things yet?
I finally did. I finally did.
You finish it?
Yeah. Basically, this last week, my wife and I just powered through it, and it was. It was one of those TV shows that actually lived up to the hype.
Yeah, Krista and I did that last weekend. We didn't mean to watch all of it.
Uh-huh.
It's like,
I know, right?
Like, we meant to just, like, watch, like, an episode or two and then, like, maybe string it out over the course of a week. And then, like, in over 2 days, like, we just watched the entirety of the thing.
And yeah, I can't imagine not doing that because it's just so.
Oh my god, it's so.
So many
good.
Ideas, so many. I mean the setting, the visuals, the acting. Dear God, the acting, the music. Even though I was really distracted because their use of New Republic's Allergia during Will's funeral. That song was also used in the trailer for Metal Gear Solid 5. So I was waiting for Big Boss to show up, and he never showed up.
Well, you know, it's my one thing about Stranger Things is this is not really a spoiler at all. Is that, you know, Will's brother, whose name I forget the character's name.
Jonathan.
So you notice like all the movie posters Jonathan has are for things like Evil Dead and like all this other stuff. How the hell did he get those posters? Like Evil Dead was a flop. Nobody saw Evil Dead. Like I understand that.
Clearly Jonathan did.
Like I understand.
Jonathan's
that he wanted to
pretty cool.
But it's not like this is the early 80s. There's not like a Hot Topic or even like the 90s where we had Suncoast Video where you could go out and buy the movie posters. You know what I mean? Like to get movie posters like that back then, you had to like know people who worked in theaters and like.
Well, it's a small town, so he might have just asked the theater owner if he could have the poster after they were done running
it. But they're
all
in pristine condition. I just do not buy.
I guess, yeah.
Like it worked. Like I understood that. Like with all the posters they had up, like there was like a Dark Crystal poster, like that. It was like all like because it was.
Yeah,
an
where
homage.
Did he get that? Jeez.
Yeah, I'm like Jesus Christ. Like nobody like. Well, it's like the Evil Dead was like all especially sticking out in my head because I'm like the whole like the Evil Dead movies were massive. Like the first two like were I think financially successful enough to keep justifying making more, but they were never hits. You know, like Army of Darkness was a complete flop when that came out. The third one, I'm obviously like you just had the first movie's poster up, but like none of these were successful. Like Evil,
he does seem like the kind of kid who would be into cult movies like that, though.
Right,
to
but
be
it
fair,
just, it just comes down to the no. Like I'll buy that he liked the film. It's just that I don't buy, like, it's hard for me to buy that he'd be able to buy a poster in that good condition and to hang it on his wall.
I don't know. As much as I loved the show, I felt like...
There you are.
I felt like there was too many points where they were like, hey, by the way, guys, this takes place in the 80s. Did you know that we're in the 80s right now?
Actually, that didn't, like, I didn't really get that.
I didn't feel that. I thought it was... delightfully 80s, but like, I didn't feel like it was shoving it in my face.
As the first couple episodes felt like, okay, I get it. We get it. It's the 80s. Like, just like even like Will's mom going out and being like, I got us tickets to Poltergeist.
Well, yeah, but yeah, but I mean, that's his mom taking him to an R-rated movie. That's pretty...
Yeah, that's
like,
a big deal.
But it just, to me, it felt like, I loved the show. I'm glad there's a season two. But like
oh,
part of me, like
that
for the
yet.
First
we still,
two episodes,
we were still building first, up because it's your story.
Yeah,
for the first two episodes, it was pretty much like to me, it felt like okay, yeah, okay, we get it. It's the 80s. From there on, once I got past that, it's honestly one of the best original series I've seen in a while. There were really no. What I loved about the mystery of the show was that it never really explained it. It gave you just enough so that you could be like, "What could this be?" But it doesn't strictly tell you what the Demogorgon is or what exactly the Upside Down is or anything like that. And that's perfect because I don't want that kind of thing explained to me. I'm okay with it maybe being explored in a later season, but I'm totally okay with them just being like, this is here, it exists, it was created, was it created, has it always been there? Who knows? But that is what I think makes a show so good and accessible in a world filled with shows that needs to explain every single thing that they put forward. This is a show that gives you just enough information for you to make your own conclusions. It's a good water cooler discussion, and that's a good show. That's the kind of show we haven't had in years, probably since the mid-2000s, when shows like Lost and the first season of Heroes I mean, hell, maybe even dating back to the X-Files, you haven't had a show where you've been like, well, no, this is my theory, but there's no real answer given.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's some stuff hidden to that. Obviously, like, we don't know what certain aspects are, but I think a lot of it is actually pretty clear.
You
know,
I thought it was pretty clearly explained, but that's...
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe this is just me and my background in the conspiracy world and knowing that Stranger Things is heavily based off of the Montauk conspiracies. Like, so much so that the show originally was going to be set in Montauk and was going to be called Montauk, and they moved it to Indiana. Like, this is, like, heavily based off, like, the Montauk experiments. And
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, same.
Montauk. You can look it up and you can read about it. There's so much stuff in there that, like, is directly out of, like, the supposed, like... I mean, don't get me wrong. The Montauk experiments were a bunch of stuff made up by a guy to sell books. But... but when applied properly in a fictional setting, it makes for very good entertainment.
But you still don't really know, like, what is going on at the Hawkins Institute.
Right.
You don't really have an idea, like, even when the show is done, and I'm sorry if this spoils a little bit.
Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it. Just hold back.
But it doesn't give you the answers, which is something that is very rare in TV shows nowadays. Like I said, I mean, like, you had shows like Lost or The X-Files or Heroes back before it got canceled tragically after one season, where you would get, you know, I remember staying up late talking to friends being like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Like, what do you think it is? What's going on? It treats the viewer as somebody that can make up their own mind about what's going on. And I think that is something that has not been present in a lot of television lately.
I think, you know, honestly, I think that maybe you're overselling that aspect, but I don't disagree that it is, like, it assumes the viewer is going to have to be intelligent and put things together themselves.
Well, I don't think necessarily intelligent. But I don't think it necessarily implies that the viewer is going to be intelligent or assumes that.
Okay.
I just think that it's such a show that has sparked such good positive theory discussion, which I haven't seen from a show in a very long time.
I really enjoyed the subtle foreshadowing for stuff, like the When the kids are riding their bike at the beginning of the series, one of them bets the other one an issue of X-Men 134, which is
the Dark Phoenix,
the beginning of the Dark Phoenix saga. And I thought that was really a nice, clever way to foreshadow we're about to deal with a psychic girl.
Well, what I love about what I think is really interesting about the show, and one of the more interesting pieces of the way they tell stories in it, is that the way that the show borrows to play on nostalgia through visual language. Like, there are many different parts of the film which direct the film. Well, it is really just a really long film, the series, where it plays visually using the language of other films, where they very specifically mimicked the way scenes were shot in other things, from when Elle points at the picture of Will, it is directly, like, mimicked to be the shot from Witness, where the little boy points to the picture of the picture of the guy of the killer in Witness, that he points out to Harrison Ford's character. Like, the very fact that, like, there's a shot where the characters are trying to escape on bikes from government agents, which is directly visually based on a very similar scene from E.T.
Mm-hmm.
with a different outcome to, you know, how things are handled. But it's what they very specifically did, be it some of the shots borrowed from Poltergeist, some of the shots borrowed from E.T., some of the shots borrowed from Stand By Me. What they did is that they created a... now, if you've never seen the stuff that they're referencing, the genius of the show is it still works if you don't have this visual language in your brain. So mm-hmm. you can, like, the show is well written and done well enough where if you don't know this visual language, you will still enjoy it. But if you do, what it does is by never overtly referencing those source materials, what it does is it kind of triggers a memory in your brain where it feels familiar and it tries to evoke the emotion during the scene in the film that it's, you know, doing, whether it be like the you know, a scene from E.T. trying to, you know, mimic like the excitement and hope, or the like shooting something like Poltergeist to try to make you feel eerie, you know, to make you feel like something's wrong before something wrong happens. And set that up visually through the language. And I think that's it's a really intentional thing that they did, and they've stated that they did it. Or like using scenes that are shot like Stand By Me to, you know, evoke kind of the camaraderie between the main character, like the young boy characters, and Elle. Like all of these things are kind of like they set the tone visually by pulling that, you know, from other media sources that you might not even be actively thinking about, but part of your subconscious, if you've seen those original films, will pull on your own like emotional core throughout them. And I think it's genius.
Well, even on the over, like, even you mentioned the visual language, but even the use of genre tropes. I mean, I read an article that somebody pointed out that, I mean, The Boys, their story is very much like the 80s sci-fi adventure kind of thing.
It's E.T.
The Hopper and Will's mom, I cannot remember her name right now for the life of me. Joyce.
Winona Hopper's character, yeah.
Hopper and Joyce, they're very much the 80s conspiracy thriller.
Yeah, it's Winona Ryder actually insisted that her character have the same hair as the main character from Silkwood.
Perfect. And the Jonathan Nancy story is very much like the 80s teen slasher.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tropes going on in that, and it all comes together at the end, which is what I love in the show, is that every person plays a part, but it all comes together at the end, which is beautiful. I will say I don't understand everybody going gaga over Barb. I think that is a meme that is overstated.
Because we all relate to Barb. Because every Barb single is... one of us in this series, we would all be Barb.
Mm-hmm.
Every single, you cannot pretend that you wouldn't end up being Barb if you were in this story. We would all be Barb.
I've never cut my hand open trying to shotgun a beer like that.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, it's like
my favorite comment on Barb is that Barb is so uncool that her only attempt to be cool ended in her bleeding all over a pool and summoning a hell beast to it from another dimension.
Yeah.
You see, I know the article that you shared that from, and the entire thesis of it seemed to be, why didn't Barb see Grease? Doesn't she understand that in order for us to like her, she needs to be cool? Like, that seemed to be, like, the entire argument.
Well, I will say, there are some things I liked in this series where they defied expectations. Like, I really like what they did with Steve. Like,
right? That was... Honestly, the lesson we learned from Steve is that sometimes just to straighten somebody up, they need a good beating.
Well, is he also?
I was glad to see that John Ralphio is not as awful a guy as I thought he was. Personally.
Unrelated, I love that the Duffer brothers have both said that yeah, he's Gene Ralphio's dad.
So he becomes a dentist.
Apparently, apparently they both said in an interview like, "Yep, no, it's canon." It takes place.
Wait a minute, his Gene Ralphio. Slowly... Have you seen Parks and Rec?
Well, if you'll notice throughout the series. Steve's hair goes from like being normal to like full Jean Ralphio by the end of the season. Just pay attention to the progression. Like his hair, every episode Steve's in, his hair gets a little bit taller.
Well, they've said they're related, and like they've gone on record to be like, nope, they're related.
Oh, it makes sense. It's Hawkins, Indiana, because they shot it in Georgia. Looks a lot like Southern Indiana. And Pawnee is in Southern Indiana because it's supposed to be near Muncie. So, you know, geographically, it'd be pretty right. Actually, like, that's like the little things I'm like, man, the town they picked in Georgia really looks like all the small Indiana towns I spend time in. Like, because I spend a lot of time on the weekends in small town Indiana. And I was like, yeah, no, they picked the exact right, like, period architecture. And, This looks too real. And I love the fact that, like, was it a Waupaca, Wisconsin shirt one of the kids was wearing?
Yeah, it was Waupaca, yep.
And
I remember that.
It's probably a faux vintage shirt that the kid's wearing, but it looks like every Wisconsin tourism shirt from the 80s. Like, because yeah. I had, like, Rhinelander ones as a kid that were very similar in design. Like, I don't know if that exact design existed, actually, in the 80s. But it's very similar to real shirts that did exist in the time period.
I'm just curious if we're going to get, like, the same...
So, yeah, I guess we should mention the news story, that the reason why we're talking about Stranger Things.
Yes.
Because...
I didn't...
Because fur disappeared on us, and we don't know where, and we were left filling time.
I was in the Upside Down for a little bit, guys. It was weird in there, and I accidentally cut my toe open on a picture frame down by my desk, and there was a power surge, and I had to fight a horrible hell beast. It was weird, but I got out because I crawled out from my bathroom.
So give him the news.
Who'd have thunk that the portal was in my toilet?
Give him the news.
Stranger Things is renewed for season 2.
Explosive diarrhea.
Yes.
Season 2.
Yay. It's officially renewed.
We don't really know what's going to happen with season 2. We don't know. I saw the trailer, and there was a lot of stuff going on in the season 2 trailer.
We have all the title names for all the episodes for season 2.
So we don't know if it's going to be an exact follow-up we don't know what they're going to cover in that show, though, in season 2.
But it's going to be a continuation of the story.
I mean, I hope they don't open up and be like, right away, oh, here's all the answers. I hope that doesn't happen. I do hope we get a little bit more with the Hawkins Institute. I'd like to know a little bit more about what's going on with what happened at the exact end of the series.
A lot of stuff open.
Yeah.
Which I love. Like, I love the theories that are going around about, Eleven and the Upside Down and all that. It's great. Season 2 will be out in 2017.
Yeah. The episode titles for season 2 are Mad Max, The Boy Who Came Back to Life,
because the 80s.
The Pumpkin Patch, The Palace, The Storm, The Pollywog, The Secret Cabin, The Brain, and The Lost Brother.
See, I didn't realize that those were the episode names. I thought they were just, like, weird names that they were throwing out to the characters.
No, those are the episode titles for season 2.
Stranger Things season 2. Best show. Honestly, I'm going to go out and say that it's the best original series I've seen on Netflix that's a drama. I think the best comedy on Netflix is BoJack Horseman, but best drama goes to definitely Stranger Things.
Well, I'm not arguing with it.
Well, you know, I'm...
Then again, I don't watch Narcos. I don't know if that's good.
I don't know. I think Jessica Jones is pretty damn good, so it's like...
Crap, you're right.
I didn't spike Jessica Jones like I did Stranger Things. I didn't work the next day when I started watching Stranger Things, and I didn't realize it was only 8 episodes long. So I got to the 8th episode. I'm like, wait a minute, this feels like it's wrapping up.
I'm physically incapable of marathoning Jessica Jones because it's way too depressing.
No, I know it's really depressing. But I do think Stranger Things is so far the best new series this year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any argument there.
I think Luke Cage is going to have a hard time one-upping Stranger Things.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, most things are. It's, you know, honestly, though, like, I'm a fan of anything that's just not a remake or a rehash of something from before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially from the 80s.
Oh.
Or even the 90s.
I'd say, yeah, the 90s is becoming a
place
to draw from.
Speaking of rehashes from the 90s, Nick.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was so excited to talk about Stranger Things. Yeah, so speaking of rebooting things that people barely remember. So The Crow is a cult film of sorts that's mostly famous for being that movie that tragically killed Bruce Lee's son, Brandon. Bit of a supernatural action piece, was supposed to be the starter to a big franchise.
Well, it was the beginning of a big franchise, just not for Brandon Lee.
Yeah. Ooh.
It was, however, a revolution in digitally putting an actor's face on his body double.
Oh, sad day. But anyway, so it was still a pretty big movie at the time. A lot of people were talking about it.
For those of us from the 90s, mm-hmm. who were teenagers in the 90s, we remember The Crow, and The Crow was great.
Hey, that's the thing is that, well, I mean, it must have been pretty big because even though I was not a teenager in the 90s, I was peripherally aware of it. And if I was peripherally aware of pop culture when I was a little kid, trust me, it must have been pretty important because I was kind of dense that way.
Well, it was based off the comic, obviously,
mm-hmm.
And it spawned, besides the main Crow movie, it spawned a couple of sequels. I think the last...
Were they in theaters? I don't remember
the theatrical release. Second
so.
One, the second movie was in theaters. I think the third movie was straight to video. And
I don't think the second one was in the theaters. I'm going to look that up. I'm trying to remember, and I don't...
That should be Crow City of Angels.
Well, it has a 12% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, it wasn't good. Yeah, 96. Yeah, that should have been in theaters.
Maybe, I don't know. Well, anyway.
Yeah, and also it had a TV series starring Mark
Dacascos. I do remember the TV series being a thing.
Oh, it did. It did open in City of Angels did.
Yeah.
Release in 96, but it went pretty quickly to VHS.
Oh, it flopped. It was a complete and total flop. But you know, I'm just saying, like. I'm the guy who was like a teenager when City of Angels came out, so I remember this pretty well. You guys were what, like 7?
Now keep in mind, The Crow City of Angels video game also came out, and right over the crow's face are the words 3D fighting with a vengeance.
Yeah, so, like, the third movie, The Crow Salvation, was supposed to come out in theaters, but then had its theatrical release canceled because City of Angels flopped so hard. And then the fourth movie, which I didn't know existed until I read this right now, Wicked Prayer, had a one-week theatrical premiere at one theater and then went straight to video. So I didn't know that The Crow Wicked Prayer happened in 2005, but it totally did. And then they were going to make The Crow 2037 to be directed by Rob Zombie. However, it never got made.
What a shame.
But they've been trying to remake The Crow since like 2008, and like different actors and different directors have been attached to it.
Well, someone else is getting attached to it now. Yeah, we are looking at a Crow reboot with Jason Momoa attached to star.
Playing Eric Draven. Yeah. Mm. Our third Eric Draven.
And probably, who knows, maybe not our last. Who who knows?
I'm just saying, like, Mark Dacascos is underrated in the Crow's Stairway to Heaven.
I'm not arguing. I love him in pretty much everything I've seen him in.
The other Crow movies did not have the Eric Draven character. They just had different characters. Because the plot of The Crow is that if a person dies with unfinished business, they can be brought back to life when their spirit is carried by a crow. And they come back as like a superpowered zombie. Like, but with like intelligence. So like an undead superhero. Spirit of vengeance sort of thing.
Right.
Like Ghost Rider, only with goth makeup instead of a flaming skull.
I don't know how I feel about it. Anyway, so a Crow remake with
with Jason Momoa, which I think is, I think,
are we,
yeah,
are we about to see Jason Momoa become like the Chris Pratt of 2017?
I'm okay.
It's weird. He's kind of taking off, but I haven't. Has he actually been in anything people have seen yet?
Well, honestly, no, not yet.
Game of Thrones.
It's all the. Yeah, it's, well, Game of Thrones, but other than that, it's literally like him getting casting announcements.
It's
well,
like, hey, remember that awful YouTube video Wonder Woman watched? Yeah, that was him.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, I mean, he's a good actor. Like, I loved him on Stargate Atlantis, where he played Ronan Dax, and he Ronan, I thought, was a great character on that show. And I mean, I didn't watch Baywatch Hawaii, so I don't know how he was on that. But on Stargate Atlantis, he was great, you know. And now he's going from, you know, being a soldier on Atlantis to being king of Atlantis in Aquaman. Dumb joke. But I like, he's a good performer. I mean, no one saw the Conan movie he was in, so I don't know if that was any good. You know, did you see the Conan reboot? I didn't see the Conan reboot.
I didn't see it. I had a friend who told me it was just terrible, but, you know, that's all I got.
Yeah, no one saw the Conan reboot. But, so, like, he's, you know what it is, that, like, he feels like the right guy to play the Crow. Like, for a while, I think, like, they've had so many random names associated with this film and, like, in its attempts to be made, like, I think Bradley Cooper at one point was attached and, like, weird actors. And I'm just like, Jason Momoa is the first actor where, like, I think about it and I go, like, no, yeah, no, I could totally see him in the black and white makeup. Like,
my biggest problem with Bradley Cooper is anytime he's brought up, I just immediately imagine a raccoon these days. I can't even see his face anymore.
I just think of his character from Wet Hot American Summer, which was his first film.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I was going to ask, was that like his first movie or something?
Yes, okay. It was. He skipped his college graduation to be in it.
Good man. I'm glad that worked out for him.
Yeah.
Cool.
I love that movie.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen it.
Oh my God, you should watch it, and then you should watch First Day of Camp.
Is that the Netflix series or sequel thing?
It's
or
it's the Netflix prequel. So Wet Hot American Summer takes place on the last day of camp. And so First Day of Camp is the miniseries telling the story of what happened on the first day of camp.
That's kind
of
cool.
It does involve the line at the end of the thing saying, you know, by the end of the summer, you'll all feel 15 years younger. And then they're going to make another season called 10 Years Later. Because the end of Wet Hot American Summer has a random, like, post-credits scene of, like, them getting together 10 years later. And so they're going to make a miniseries about all the events around that reunion.
Neat.
All right, so speaking of people getting together and joining hands, feet, mouths, and other appendages in global
harmony.
Can
we not join mouths? Can we not do that? Let's don't. No.
In singing.
Right, that's right, of course.
Enjoy.
And
join us.
Macking on each other.
You know, in next episode that we're doing is going to be live from the Nerd and Tie Expo.
Yeah, is from about half a mile from my apartment.
Yeah, from lovely Eau Claire, Wisconsin, the Plaza Hotel and Suites, the last fandom convention ever to be held in that hotel.
It's true.
Because it won't exist much longer after the convention, but it'll totally
exist. We
got a month
after an expo before that hotel is gone.
But yeah, we're throwing a convention. You might have heard us plug it at the beginning of every episode for the last forever. But
for about a year now.
Yeah, it's finally happening. It's finally here. It is going to be pretty great. I'm really excited. And I'm not saying that just because I have all of the badges and lanyards and badge holders sitting in my office right now. Hear that? That's a Nerd and Tie Expo badge.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. And it's going to be pretty amazing. I think we got a really good guest lineup with voice actress Tiffany Grant. We've got cosplayers.
She's super excited to be here.
Tiffany Grant is, by the way, if you're ever going to start a convention, you have to bring Tiffany Grant. That's just like in the rules. Right? I mean, I'm not crazy. Like, there's just this like list of things that, like, if you're starting a new convention, like step three is invite Tiffany Grant. You know, I'm pretty sure it's like in the Constitution. But also we've got guests like cosplayer Helena Steele.
She is great and also very excited to be coming to Nexpo.
Yeah, she's a nationally published model. We've got Lewis Lovehog, also known as Linkara.
He is a man. Punch. Wears a pretty hat.
You can see him on the internet.
I love the fact that your voice digitally degraded while you tried to say internet. That seems appropriate.
It's in my contract with my devil.
All right. Obviously he does the show Atop the Fourth Wall on Channel Awesome, and he's a pretty cool dude who reviews comics, and we're told people like him and we like him, so, you know, why not? Invite people who are awesome. And then we have podcaster Sean Orange Course, from Famicom Dojo, the retro gaming podcast and video series. He's going to be there. That's going to be pretty cool. And we've got the band Bards of the Goddesses playing on a Friday night concert. So that's a pretty great set of people.
It's going to be a good time. You can't pre-reg anymore, but if you show up to the hotel, you can register. It'll be $40 at the door, unless you're listening from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and you're a student at CVTC or University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. As long as you got your badge, or your ID, rather, you can get in for $30.
$30, which is the same price the pre-reg was. So and we've got, obviously, like, Vendor Room, Artist Alley, Tabletop Gaming Room, Video Gaming Room provided by World 9 Gaming. We've got, we've got panels, we've got late night bad horror movies, we've got, you know, it's pretty much everything you could want, desire, dream of. Be there or you will be sad.
Super sad.
Mm-hmm. Very sad.
And tears All right. shall pour from your face like burning molten gobs of horror. You don't want that, so come to the convention instead.
Yeah, get your butt up here.
Do it.
Or down here, depending on what direction you live in.
Or over, I guess, if you're directly east or west.
Point is, I want you there.
Yeah. Get yourself onto a potato truck. Hitch a ride.
All right, let's...
potatoes. They're not yours.
So at this point,
let's go to the mailbag.
So we should continue to the mailbag.
Yeah,
it's
we got some
episode.
Cool stuff in here this point.
All right, so I'm going to start off the mailbag with a letter from Corfan, subject SETI. He wrote, "It's surprising how well Nick is containing himself considering the signal SETI picked up contained the words Hail Hydra."
Well, let's be realistic here. I'm not saying that, you know,
he's
any sort of organization is in on it, but they might be.
So he's writing us about that supposed alien signal that we now believe actually came from Earth, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was exciting for like 2 days.
It was really disappointing. That was heartbreaking is what that was.
He wrote to us while that news hadn't been revealed to have come from Earth, though. So to be fair, he was trying to get excited about something that we hadn't yet been revealed, that it was just another, you know, reflected radio signal.
Trust me, I was excited, and then I was heartbroken.
You were heartbroken.
Let's see. What else is in the mailbag?
We've got a letter from someone named Mad Chemist, and the subject is anger!
Yeah.
He writes, "Hi all," or she, I suppose. He or she writes, "Hi all," or they. They write, "Hi all, what show franchise has made you so angry that you won't watch read the media again? Also, I'm not crazy, I'm just angry." I wish you all the best at the expo, which I know that you will kick so much ass that Chuck Norris will bow down and call you masters. Signed, the Mad Chemist. I've made reference to it once in this episode, and Heroes. Heroes could have been so good and was so good, and then they blew it all up.
I still liked it. It just wasn't as good. I feel, you know what it is? I'm blanking. Like, I know that there's stuff that I stopped watching because it got awful. And I know there's stuff that I said I'm done with, and I just can't remember.
Well, I guess
Mother fracking Valve Rave the Liberator.
I guess on a more serious note, kind of, I guess, along with the seriousness of Nick's, I will not watch anything that Bryan Singer has to do with. So,
yeah. I mean, I guess it's like not from within the franchise, though.
Yeah, I suppose.
That's real people. But I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like I know that there's stuff that I've stopped watching that I just said I'm never going back to this again, and I just literally cannot remember. Like, and this is driving me nuts. Like, I am completely blanking. So I'm going to say yes. There are things that I stopped watching, and I can't remember what they are.
For more information, if new listeners are wondering why I'm so angry at Valve Rave the Liberator, just go to my YouTube channel. There's
You don't have to watch any videos. Just go to his YouTube channel.
Don't watch Valve Rave the Liberator. Don't do it.
Do me a big favor and do not support that series in any way.
Yeah.
All right, we got one more letter in the mailbag. Thanks, Mad Chemist. All right.
Yeah,
we got one
more.
Our next and last letter comes from the Random Ramblings Man. Subject, even stranger things than usual. All right. Greetings and salutations, my kindly nerdy chums and ties. Hope this past fortnight has treated you kindly. I know I had a ball. Weddings and hangouts and life progress galore. And, of course, prepping for Expo. First, I have to finish Stranger Things, and I gotta say, I was not disappointed. You and me both. Part of me wondered whether or not the series would drop the ball in a big way toward the end, but it didn't, and the announcement of a second season, complete with episode titles, no less, has me feeling pretty good about the show's future right now. Next, Star Trek's 50th anniversary! As someone who grew up with Trek, was raised by parents who love Trek and has been inspired more than one way by Trek, it makes me feel good knowing that it can celebrate this franchise enduring 50 years of entries, good, bad, and ugly. Hopefully Discovery will prove to be a worthy entry in the canon. Amen.
Hmm.
Yep. Third, learning that Deathstroke, the Terminator, is the villain of the Batman solo film in the DC Extended Universe has left me feeling blah. It's better than suffering through Jared Leto's Joker again, but I was hoping for a foe along the lines of Hugo Strange or Deacon Blackfire. I guess it could be it could be down to feeling like Deathstroke's been overexposed in Batman media recently. And not just in Batman.
Yeah.
But I shall remain optimistic about both and the character appearing, and the choice of actors, even if we're three movies into this universe and all three films have felt more like eating wall paste than something tastier.
But Suicide Squad was very financially successful.
Shockingly. I can't wrap my head around that. I'm sorry, it just blows my mind. Alright. Finally, I've begun visiting a modern sci-fi classic most people have already watched, To Hell and Back. I'm rather amused by the reactions when I say I've never seen an episode of this series. The series is Babylon 5. So far, I'm digging it, and if anyone on Nerd and Tie has episodes to recommend, please let me know and I'll check them out. I have never watched Babylon 5.
You know, I haven't watched Babylon 5 in years, and so the problem is that because the series is so written as like a singular story, that it's hard for me to remember. Like, I remember all the events of Babylon 5, but A lot of times I have a hard time remembering, like, the exact episodes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a lot like Zeta Gundam that way, because that's a series where I cannot tell you what happens in individual episodes.
I can tell you which season something happened in. Like, I can tell you, you know, where they were in season 3 versus season 2 versus season 5. It's just that it was, like, written as, like, a 5-act play.
Right.
And it's, I was rewatching part of it, like, maybe, oh god, no, this was, like, still, like, 7 or 8 years ago I was rewatching it. So, like, that's how long ago my recent rewatch was.
Wow.
Yeah, because I was living in Eau Claire. Like, I love the show. It has some weaker spots because obviously it was done from a much smaller budget than, like, what Star Trek was. Like, you got to think, like, that was, going out at the same time as Deep Space Nine. So it's hard for me to, like, single... Like, I can remember specific episodes that I loved in the sense that I know that there's kind of a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern episode which, like, follows two minor characters around, like, the outside of the story. I don't even remember what season that was in. It did have great comments, like, where there's a random background task you see, like, maintenance people doing all the time, and it's really not clear what they're doing. And the two characters comment, "What exactly are we doing with this thing? I have no idea." You know, but there's weaker episodes, like the episode that, like, Penn and Teller are on. I didn't like that episode where they play kind of, like, a couple of, like, famous people in the alternate reality. That is Babylon 5 or future, whatever. I think there's some great characters on there. I love the Marcus Cole character. I love Lanier. Lanier is great, Bill Mumy's character. I love Stephen First. Like, anything involving the Centauri-Narn conflict, like, those, I love those storylines. But I can't point out a particular episode. Not unless I rewatched it. Like, I need, and then that reminds me, I need to rewatch Babylon 5. I know a lot of people haven't watched Babylon 5. Like, my wife's only seen a couple episodes of Babylon 5. I remember being really, like, the only reason why I was watching TV when Princess Diana died is because I was trying to watch Babylon 5. And I remember before finding out why the news was interrupting my show, being really annoyed that the news was interrupting my show.
Yeah, like I said, I've never seen it, so I can't really...
Yeah, it's... Crusade, do not watch Crusade. Do not watch the spinoff. It is so not worth it, remotely. But yeah, no, I have a love for Babylon 5, and it is a thing. But it does not hold up as well as the Star Trek series from the same time period, just because the acting's not as good from the... Well, like, the leads are all good. Like, Bruce Boxleitner's great, you know, but it's like the guest stars aren't always good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember, actually in high school, I remember talking to people about DS9, because I love DS9. And I knew people who were like, I won't watch DS9 because it's a ripoff of Babylon 5.
Well, there's a story there that J. Michael Straczynski went and tried to shop it to Paramount while it was getting made. And then a year later, Paramount announced Deep Space Nine after seeing his treatments for Babylon 5.
Huh.
So, you know, the space station where the commander is... like this mythical figure in the religion of the one of the key alien races in the show, but that's revealed throughout the series. Oh, and they have a small, powerful ship that they have to go along with. That's an experimental prototype warship that they also have to go along with their space station with a number in the name. Like, there are so many superficial similarities between the two series. And you know, like. Obviously, they're very different where, like, you know, it's like if they would, they would be really similar if, like, while the Paul Wraith thing is a major part of Deep Space Nine's, like, end plot, it's not the core story. Like, if the Prophets versus the Paul Wraiths had been the, like, main and only story of Deep Space Nine, then yeah, you'd get me on the show being a complete ripoff. But because really it's that mythical battle, which is more core to the story of Babylon 5 than it is to Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine, it's almost the B plot versus the A plot for Sisko, even. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like,
yeah, yeah.
Sisko's journey as a character has very little to do with being the emissary. Like, it's part of it, and, like, it's a key part of the final season in many ways, but, like, it's not his story as to who he is.
I would say, yeah, at the end of the series, it becomes very up in the forefront, but yeah. Yeah.
But it's not the core of who he is as a person. So, yeah. Anyways, we should move on to the Vomit Head Steve Challenge.
Indeed. We should.
Oh, you're still here.
I am. I'm sticking around to the end.
Okay. All right. Well, for those of you who don't
usually know, I usually just kind of fade out whenever you start talking about Babylon 5, Trey.
Okay. Well, the last bit of the show we always do here is the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, and that is the part of the show where I read a part of a book, and the challenge to you, the listener, is to guess what book it is from. If you guess the book correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome, and the members of the Hall of Awesome currently are as follows. Arkhamai, Zero, Renna and Isenti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lily Soros, Paper Godzilla, Kavzi, and the Minnesota Librarians. And we've been reading from the same book for a while, and I'm going to read another line out of it. Let me see here. And this is the sentence for you guys right now. Over the course of the century it existed, the Molokai colony confined an estimated 8,000 patients. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact and tell us. Or if you'd like to write to us about anything else, go there and tell us about it. Like, why do you think First Hair looks like it does? Is Steve Hotstetter really Jean Ralphio's great uncle? Anything is possible. All your dreams can come true, and you should tell us why at nerdandtie.com/contact. Someone should get us out of here.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry about that. I'm dreading the coming Monday, and I am Nick Izumi.
I'm doing a lot of stuff this week. I'm Firsters.
I'm Trey Dorn, and remember, you can always subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, and any place that good podcasts are sold through our RSS feed. And rate and review us in all those places, too, because everyone should know how amazing we are and how amazing your life is and why everything is nothing and nothing is everything and we all live in the upside down.
Ah! Reality is illusion. Earth is a hologram. Buy gold. Bye!
I just finished Gravity Falls, like, 2 days ago.
Oh, you poor soul.
I wish there was more. I just want more. Say your catchphrase, Nick.
Keep on spocking in the free world.
Dance party. Also, come to the Nerd & Tide Expo September 23rd to 25th. It's only $4 at the door. Oh my god, it's going to be so great!